You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Crazy. Well, hello, everybody. I'm Bruce Cameron along with Susan Giddings, and welcome to another exciting episode of Around the Block. So here we are. After the big, hard winter freeze, we're back at business. And doing our thing. So we have an exciting show for you today. A lot's been happening. We're going to talk about a video that was released and talk about what all impact that has. So let's get started.
All right. So we did share on the Facebook group the video. It was an interview with Rick Stover, who is special assistant to the director and my former boss. Back when I was still working, he was my administrator for a period of time, but he is the FSA person for the agency. He did about 35-minute video, posted on the public website. And like I said, we shared it, went over a bunch of stuff, a lot of things that we've talked about here, and it's good to hear. We're on the same page. He talked about the time credit calculator and that, you know, the calculator is calculating correctly. Talked a lot about FSA and SCA. And of course, you know, as you and I talk about kind of regularly, there is a difference. The laws are different. The requirements are different. And he talked a lot about the fact that the SCA built into the law is a lot of discretion, and therefore there is subjectivity with it. Spent a lot of time talking about the issue of the contracting and the bed space, and the fact that a case manager can make a recommendation for, you know, a 6-month placement, and the reentry office may come back with a 30-day placement. And he talked about the 5-factor review, and the first factor on the 5-factor review is available resources, which available resources is code for beds and money.
Booking a hotel.
Like booking a hotel. So
I think, and he borrowed that from us.
Yeah. He borrowed that, huh? Well, and he talked about the fact that, one of the challenges with the FSA, and it's working as it was designed to create people getting out of the institution and into the community sooner. And because of that, we have more people in the community. When at the time he did the video, I think I wrote it down, he had referenced 8,400 people in RCs, in halfway houses, and 4,200 in home confinement. 4,200 people in home confinement is huge numbers relative to what they have been in the past. Talked about the contracting process and they're looking at that FSA money and kind of diverting more of that money to reentry in order to renegotiate those contracts and get more bed space, more home confinement space. But there are hurdles to that. He didn't talk a lot about the hurdles to contracting. And I'd like to see that in the future, not just because it's relevant, but I think the agency talking about the challenges of the contracting process. For those who aren't and have never had to deal with the contracting rules, siting a new halfway house, expanding bed space, adding in, renegotiating a contract for more than beds, that is not a slow process. Bruce, you were involved in that. To your eyeballs.
So I've right. I was involved in the procurement of not only the treatment services for RDAP, mental health and sex offender treatment, but also just the beds themselves. I retired out of the RRM office in Dallas, Texas. And we were, the regional office in Dallas, Texas for the whole damn region, not only just Texas, but looking at the procurement of all these things. And the thing that the BOP has that's a problem is that it has to abide by the judicial acquisition regulations and the federal acquisition regulations. And so it's two sets of flying hoops to go through. And if you think about some of these contracts that are 5 or 10 year contracts, that's a long time, you know, and they don't come up for renewal.
And opening a contract to renegotiate is not just pick up the phone and make a phone call. Like there's a process with it.
Right.
And
it takes a while.
Absolutely. And then there's a situation even separate from the federal regulations, right? And all of that stuff that as a government agency, they have to deal with. There are the local zoning and ordinances. A lot of communities are just reticent to bring in reentering, folks coming back from prison, even in places where there's a more liberal mindset. And you would think they would be more on board with reentry.
For years and years, we couldn't have sex offenders in San Antonio. And that was a huge hit for a lot of inmates from the Western District of Texas that were down that way. And they simply couldn't.
And San Antonio wasn't unique in that regard.
No, and that was
a lot of halfway houses.
Because we'd have to decline them. And it wasn't because of us. It was because of the city ordinances that they had down there. We can't help that. We can't change that. You can't sue the Bureau because of that. You're out of luck is what you are. So
absolutely.
Anyway, and I'm so glad. And some of our viewers picked up on it. Like, actually, some people listened to what Stover was saying about, and the first one is community resources, 5-factor review, and all the stuff that you and I have been saying over and over and over again. And now here we are, and he's actually saying it. Now, a lot of people aren't going to like it, right? Because people back in the day were getting home confinement and halfway house. It seems like they're leaning toward more, just home confinement for many folks. But anyhow, so I am very pleased that he broke those things down. But anyway, so the first thing is community resource availability.
Right.
What else is
And to that regard, this is something that you and I talk about, is it's not just, he talked about the hotel analogy and the amount of space. You and I have talked about it from a little bit different perspective, right? We talk about how early it gets done. And now that the worksheets have all of this information, they have, the conditional release dates were added in 2023. In October of 2024, they added the conditional placement dates. And then this past summer late July of 2025, they added the max home confinement dates. By having all of these dates and all of this information readily available to the case managers can now be doing that paperwork sooner. That's been the biggest challenge with FSA, because prior to FSA, as a case manager, right, I ran my roster. I knew who was leaving. I knew when they were leaving. It was a fixed date. I mean, barring them getting in trouble and then that created more problems. But, separate from that, as long as everything kept going like it was going, I knew when they were going to release. I could talk about their halfway house 2-3 years ahead of time because I had a predictable date. The case managers haven't had that. So a lot of times they're just kind of, in the past, they've been kind of flying by the seat of their pants in terms of, when do I put this paperwork in, right? And Rick talked about that, is that not having those dates, they would put it in based on the information they had. And then by the time they got the designation, well, the person's earned more credits and now dates have moved again. And they weren't late releases, but they weren't maximizing that amount of time they could get. With all of these dates now in place, they are, and we're seeing that more and more. But we still have folks who, look at those dates and say, well, I should be able to get, the law says I can get 12 months in halfway house. Why can't I? And that's what Rick was talking about, you know, yes, you can get 12 months. Yes, your case manager can put you in for 12 months of halfway house. And the reentry office may come back with less. And if there's not beds at the inn, there's not beds at the inn. Something else that Rick talked about, that you and I have talked about, is just because you call up the halfway house, and we know family members do this all the time. Hey, my loved one, do you have bed space? And of course, the halfway house provider is going, well, yeah, because they know what they have empty beds or not. But again, are those beds federal contract beds? Because a lot of these halfway houses provide services for both federal and state, federal, state, and county. You know, so are those federal beds? Are those part of the federal contract? And while they have the paperwork and the dates for the folks that are in the halfway house, it's the reentry offices that have that pipeline. They're the ones that have the 100 or 150 packets that they're working through to get assigned to beds. So they not only have the folks that are in the halfway house or scheduled to have for halfway house, they also have the ones that don't have a date yet and their paperwork's being processed. And that's information that the halfway houses don't have. So by calling the halfway house and saying, oh, hey, my loved one's trying to get their date changed. Do you have bed space? And they tell you, yes, they probably do. They're being honest with you. But are those beds actually available?
Right.
Is a whole nother question.
Right. And with females, there's only 6 to 7% of the BOP population. And so either there's going to be more female bed space in a place or there's going to be less female bed space. And it's even more competitive for some of the females in some of the areas. So
absolutely. And that's why it's so important that the agency is now kind of rolled out all of these new data points for case managers so that they can be providing information. I think we've talked about it. One thing I would love to see is a little change in that conditional calculator that based on when a person becomes minimum or low risk, whether that's when they walk in the door or, you know, at some point during their time in the prison system, once they drop to lower minimum risk, rather than doing a conditional calculator based on the 10-day rate and then do another one based on the 30-day or the 15-day rate, I would like to see them kind of pull that together and give them one date. Even if they just incrementally start that for the folks who are coming in at low and minimum risk, because it really creates a lot of extra work. It's you know, I'm very interested in efficiency and things moving smoother, you know, for these folks with shorter sentences. And by shorter, I mean, you know, under 30 months, under 36 months, having that kind of two-stage conditional release date change kind of creates a situation where either the case manager has to wait longer to do the paperwork. And by waiting longer to do the paperwork, that bed space might get taken, right, versus doing it too soon, getting a date, and then going back and having to correct it because the conditional release date has changed. That's my Santa Christmas list, wish list for the agency. It's just would be a more efficient process. I'm trying to think of some of the other things they talked about. Talked about the triage team at DSCC that was working this summer. They were not a permanent office. They were just a team. And he talked about them identifying about 2,800 inmates that just based on the numbers might be looking at the possibility of moving to home confinement sooner. And they were able to, within just a few weeks of that date, move about 800 inmates out to home confinement. And we saw that that was during the summertime. We saw that firsthand. Number of our clients got, who finally we knew, because we had done manual calculations, we knew they could go and had flagged them. And so we were excited to see. We followed up on a few that didn't get moved in that first batch, but we were pleased to see that. He thinking about manual calculations, he also talked about that. The case managers are not doing manual calculations. We do. And why do we do that? We do that for particularly for our clients who are with us in the pre-sentence, pre-arrival phase, is being able to manually calculate that and give them an idea about what dates they should be looking at, puts them in a position to proactively advocate for themselves and stay on top of what should be happening. More than one time, we've had that conversation with someone getting ready to report and said, okay, now you're going to come to your initial team and all they're going to have is your good conduct time. But because you've got this 15-month sentence or 18-month sentence, whatever, you know, shorter sentence it is, you know, they're going to want to set your team off for 6 months because you're more than a year from release and you're going to want to speak up. Well, you know, my conditional release date hasn't kicked in yet. I'm looking at this date. Will you advance once my date kicks in? Are you going to advance my team date? Right. If they're talking about halfway house, add initial classification. Hey, when my date changes, when are you planning to submit my paperwork? Because my date's going to change on this date. We give our clients all of that information ahead of time so that they can be advocating for themselves. We are big proponents of that self-advocating. We kind of take that dual approach.
If things seem like they're getting a little bit better on their own, I was actually talking to one of our competitors this morning.
Okay.
That followed the viral video of another competitor. Anyway, we were talking and this guy, anyway, he reached out and he's asking me, he's in a panic, a little bit of a panic, like what's going to happen with Federal Prison Consulting? And I could feel the concern in his voice. And, you know, this is a good problem to have because the Bureau's slowly getting it right. You know what I mean? They're going to make referrals based on, right, dates.
You and I have been talking about this for a while. Yeah. As this data gets out there, as things are running more smoothly, the need for that kind of
external advocacy
during incarceration kind of starts to fall away. I think in mm-hmm. recent, I don't know, past few months, I've seen an uptick in those pre-arrival cases. In the folks that are trying to plan for their incarceration.
Right.
And I think that's kind of where, I mean, obviously there'll always be situations where an external advocate is helpful.
Right.
But in terms of FSA, it is moving in the right direction. Now, I don't know that there's anything that any external advocate can do to change the contracting process to get more bed space.
But
they can wave that magic wand. How many times have we told our clients we don't sell rainbows and unicorns?
But don't worry, folks. We're not closing our doors.
I do think there is something to be said for it's getting better, and it's getting better.
It is getting better,
literally by leaps and bounds. And I think on a certain extent, I think maybe some case managers don't necessarily trust the dates yet because it is still these new dates. And that's possible. But from my perspective, as the former case manager, as a former case management coordinator, having all of these date information is so incredibly critical. Because now they have this information. And like I said, that's why I would love to see the conditional calculator move to a one-step process instead of that two-step process. Like I said, even if it's just for the folks that are on the front end of their sentence, I mean, they come in at low and medium risk because it's just waste time and energy in our right. case managers. I think there's some frustration there because, again, that date changes and then, you know, the person's coming back to their case manager and saying, but my date changed. Now have, you know, whether it's changed by 30 days or 45 days.
And that's going to continue to be a thing where the person's home confinement eligibility date now kind of creeps up on them, right? If they get to a halfway house and they're waiting on their home confinement, and there is a little bit of a lag in some of the areas between what the regional office knows and what the RRC knows about inmate X or Y. And so,
100%. Right. You know, something we've been telling all of our clients is, before you leave the institution, get your most recent worksheet. You know, your case Absolutely. Manager may or may not, you know, want to do it. But like that team that's coming up and you're leaving in 2 months, get that copy and take it with you.
Because if you're out there in that halfway house, you are a person without a country virtually. You could try to call back at the institute.
Huh? Yeah, the halfway house folks do not have access to the FSA
access.
They do not have that. They're contractors. But if you're coming to them with the worksheet and you can say, listen, this is my date. Can you call the RRM? Can we talk to the RRM? Right. You know, again, that's putting you in the driver's seat of your own life.
Yeah.
And that's important.
So we've helped with those. We've helped with incident reports while in RRC a good bit. That's probably going to pick up some. And home confinement. But other than that, and look, Susan talks about all the time, and I guess myself also, you have to advocate for yourself. You have to advocate for yourself. You can hire outside advocates and they can advocate too, but it's a better deal if you also advocate for yourself. For instance, if you want halfway house and home confinement and you're going to need extra time to find a job or find resources, or you have a family member with special needs or something to that nature, you have to be the one to advocate for that as part of your release plan. You have to do that. It's hard for an external source to say, oh yeah, they have a challenged child, or oh yeah, they have this relative over here that's near death, or oh yeah, they used to be in this field, but now they have to get a whole new career field because of their case, etc. So it really helps if you can do that. And part of our orientation and part of our communication with family members is and you can't just say, well, that's why we hired you. No. You hired us to get the best outcome and do our part of the job. But this is a team effort most of the time for the best results. So, that kind of gets to me. Go ahead.
Yep. Something else that's important, particularly when there are situations that won't change. If you are a caretaker for your elderly mother, and now where your wife and you are, and you're coming into prison, but your elderly mother is still living in your home. And now your wife is taking care of your children and your elderly mother. That information should be in the PSR.
Absolutely.
And the sooner, and so I get a little frustrated sometimes when we see a PSR after the fact and it's finalized and we ask some questions and it's, oh, well, I didn't know. Well, that's part of your family history section. So when we're involved with clients before the PSR is finalized, those are the kind of questions we're asking. Because again, having that documentation in there, and whether or not your judge or your prosecutor, you know, sees clear to kind of maybe come down below your guidelines or to the bottom of the guidelines because of this family situation, you have to remember your PSR is the document that the Bureau uses. So just because you didn't get anywhere with the prosecutor, with the judge, with whoever, understanding that the Bureau uses that report in its entirety is so very important. And being able to then come to your unit team and talk about your release needs. And one of your release needs is, you know, the fact that you and your wife have been the primary caretaker for not just your children, but your elderly mother who is residing in your home. Mm-hmm. If that's already documented in your PSR, it's not just you saying it. It's in your PSR. It's been verified. Right. Probation has visited your home and it's there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a relevant release need. It's very part much so, of yeah. your reentry. Is it part of you specifically, like getting a job and getting a home? No, but it's part of that family reintegration, that returning to the community. And reentry is about all of those things. So, mm-hmm. so very important. Some other things, let me see if I caught, I think Rick talked about more training. Of course, we have posted both of the videos that are on the Bureau's public website to the Facebook page. If you haven't seen them, you need to go look at them. There are two. One is a animated slideshow that talks about halfway house and home confinement and FSA and SCA and how all that works together. The second video, a little bit more high tech, is how the FSA calculator works. Now, the last time I watched it, they still had a small error in it, just a little one. But as far as the actual explanations, 5 days just tweaks me.
5 days.
It's 5 days. 5 days. In your seventh month, if your second assessment is after your 28 days and 180 days, it's in your seventh month, you get your 15 days. It's not in the eighth month. That the 15 days start. So anyway, that's in there, but it's still a really good, really, really good description of how the calculator works. And we still see people asking about, why am I not earning time credits while I'm in halfway house? And the answer is always the same. Your conditional placement date, in the case of someone who's getting both days toward early release and days toward early halfway house or pre-release placement, your conditional placement date is the maximum benefit date. It is the date when the amount of credit earned equals the amount of time remaining to serve. And that is right out of the law. That's how that works. If you have an FSA conditional release date and not a placement date, that is still the date when the amount of credit earned equals the remaining time to serve. It's just in that case, those days fall off. And so then you become an immediate release. But he did talk about those. If you haven't seen them again, we posted them. I think they're actually pinned, they might actually be pinned on the Facebook page to the top. But again, excellent resource. Talked about the staff. I don't know if I said this. Talked about the fact that the staff will not do manual calculations.
Right. Yeah, you did.
We do, but the staff don't and will not. And they, you know, and if a case manager, we've seen a couple of cases where the case manager tried to be helpful and messed it up.
All right. So Susan, why is it important? Why is that an important thing that we do for our clients?
Because when they walk in the door, they know what's going to happen. Barring them losing their mind and getting a cell phone incident report or something crazy, they know what's going to happen because we walk them through. This is, you know, based on their voluntary surrender date. What is your good conduct time date going to be? How much good conduct time are you earning? How much FSA is going to be, are you looking at? When do you move from 10 to 15 days? Mm-hmm. All of those important dates, how much home confinement are you looking at? We map all of that out and provide mm-hmm. that kind of walk through the term of incarceration of when things are going to change and how they're going to change. And we clue them into the questions and the things that they need to be talking about when they're sitting in that team meeting.
Right.
All very, very important things, whether it's halfway house, whether it's relocation, when the dates are going to change, you know, when is that halfway house paperwork going out? Are they going to fix it? If they're sending it out early, are they going to go and do the update when the date changes? Asking those questions, coming from a position of knowledge. And, right. you know, that old adage, knowledge is power. It absolutely is.
And so we also explore
our people.
Not only this isn't, it's kind of like it's not rocket science, but it is. Here's why I tell you. Because different inmates or inmate families will come up with their own math. And it's not right. Or I went to the federal calculator, some bohunk federal, you know, calculator, and it's usually not correct. I haven't seen one that
somebody,
is correct.
Every time somebody posts one, I actually go and I run a few test scenarios on it. And I've yet to have one that
is correct.
Has been correct in every test scenario.
And so when we do the calculation for you, we tell you this is this, this is this, this is this, this is the date, this is the other date, this is the next date. That's what it is. That's just
right.
what it is. Well, and so,
and the other thing you talk about, like individuals, and we've had it happen. Family member calls, mm-hmm. my loved one has gone through, figured it out. He's not getting all of his credit. Okay. And we'll ask questions. And one of the things we do when they retain us is we say, okay, we want you to have him either write and send it by mail or email it to explain exactly what he thinks is wrong. And the reason we do that is, and I've told clients when they say, oh, it's off by 200 days, it's off by 400 days. I have point blank said, I don't think that's correct. Because if you tell me it's off by 10 days, okay, maybe there's something going on. But 400 days of time credits, you know, quite literally translates to years of programming days.
Or jail time credit that doesn't apply or something.
Right, right. So, and in one particular case, you know, they retained us anyway. I said, send us the worksheet, but I want him to write on the worksheet exactly where the problem is and spell it all out. And we got a very lengthy explanation, and it was wrong on different areas. He was calculating it the way good conduct time is calculated. He was prorating and giving himself partial credit.
Front loading, back loading.
Oh, it was just all over the place. And it was like, you know, there was, and I'll be honest, there's that part of me that, like, I felt a little bad because we warned him. He's probably incorrect, but the work is the same. And we had someone ask, well, if you do the calculation, it was another case, if you do it and it's right, do you refund? And I said, well, no, because the work is the same. Even if I think it's right, I'm going to manually go through the process.
All right.
And we spell it out. We provide our clients a written report and explain it because, again, and you've heard me say this more than one time, the only thing worse than your credit being wrong is your credit being right, but you think you're being screwed out of something. So we always want our clients and their families to know exactly what it is they're looking at. And if they really think there's something wrong and there isn't, we're going to explain it in such a way that they understand what's going on. Because going back to that importance of understanding what they're dealing with, I don't want someone to be sitting there in a prison somewhere thinking their case manager is trying to screw them out of something, which is just important from my side, from my perspective.
Then when we provide an orientation, we always tell our clients what to do there for, you know, what to do to get set up with their FSA and get that done in a very timely manner so they don't miss anything. Mm-hmm. And then particularly our clients that have these really short sentence, 12 months in a day, they really have to do some things correctly early on.
Absolutely.
That first team, they're coming in and they're going out at the same team. So
absolutely. We have a client right now who needs a relocation. He's getting ready to report. And we're like, okay, when you walk in the door, like that needs to be your first conversation with your case manager. I was sentenced here. I'm releasing here. And I need a relocation because nothing else can happen in terms of his pre-release placement and until that relocation is approved. And Bruce, your mic is showing muted right now. Your sound cut out and then you mute it yourself.
There I am.
There you are. Okay. Okay. I was watching you as I was talking.
Seeing as a mind of its own over here. I don't know what the hell's going on. But anyway, yeah.
But, and it's those kind of things that are so important. You know, he's, you know, like I said, he's going to be reporting. He has a short sentence. He's got to get his relocation done quickly and then be able to get that back so that he can still look at getting some direct home confinement.
Right. Right.
So, I think that was about it on my notes for, from Rick's video, please watch that if you haven't. Had a lot of good information in there. I think it's important that from high up in the agency, they're talking about the challenges they've had, but then also the where things are improving and where they're going. That's important. So I'm glad to hear them talking about it. With a little bit of time we had left, wanted to follow up on a topic from, several weeks ago now. We talked about the video, episode 2 of the Bureau's new podcast, Transparency Talks, and Deputy Director Smith was talking to the head of the Facilities Department, and one of the things they talked about was looking at the pay scale for individuals working in the Facilities Department, because of the fact that they have a hard time, you know, especially at an institution where there's also a unicorn, is okay, you get hired into facilities and maybe you've got some plumbing skills or some carpentry skills, but you're on the waiting list to get into unicorn, and unicorn pays better. And so they wanted to look at a strategy that they could keep more of those skilled workers in facilities working. They talked about, you know, the money, the one-time money that the Bureau got out of the Big Beautiful Bill for maintenance backlog. And they want to maximize what they're accomplishing and maximize those dollars. They talked about that. So I was looking and the Bureau has issued, they don't have the pay scale out yet, but the Bureau has issued January 15th. A couple weeks ago, a new program statement for facility work and performance pay, inmate work and performance pay, but specifically for facilities department individuals. And it breaks out how they're going to be graded out. For those of you taking notes, it's program statement 4250.01. Looks a little different than traditional program statements. The Bureau is, I'm going to hang this up, has updated the look of their program statement.
Ooh.
Already. So it looks a little more contemporary, but the important part, not so much the look, but that they're identifying the skilled grades, the grades based on whether the individual master trade worker, specialist, skilled helper, or laborer. They're going to be issuing an ops memo shortly. They were working to get this out, but it's a whole new pay structure. So for those of you, you know, you're familiar with unicorn, and unicorn workers, you know, make really good money compared to inmate performance pay, the inmate work program. Inmate work program is grades 1 through 4 with the top grade making 41 cents an hour. Where unicorn, the bottom grade starts at 23 cents an hour and goes up to $1.15. Unicorn also has incentives for longevity pay. So if you're working with unicorn for an extended period of time, and by extended, I mean after 18 months, in your 19th month as a unicorn worker, you're getting a bonus on top of your base rate. Your base rate changes. And then there's still things like overtime and premium pay. And what else? Overtime, premium pay, they get vacation, they get admin leave. There's some limitations in there. They get holiday pay. So when you're thinking about unicorn, it really, in a lot of ways, mirrors what it is to work in in the industry, you know, out in the real world, where trust fund, where inmate performance pay is the orderlies and the food service workers and the guys mowing the grass and things like that. excuse me. But the goal of this new pay, so we have Unicorp pay, we have trust fund pay, and we have trust fund, and then inmate work, the inmate work program, the traditional program that most inmates are involved in. So this is a third one or a fourth one, rather. It's this new facility program, and it's going to be based specifically on that level of skilled labor that's coming in. And of course, they've already talked about the fact that they want to optimize the apprenticeship programs so that folks are not just working on these job details, but they're also then earning those hours toward licensed apprenticeship. So if they're not already a journeyman electrician or a journeyman plumber, they can be working toward those hours so that when they release from custody, and that program isn't a bureau program, it's a Department of Labor apprenticeship program. So it's a bona fide, real live program that you can take your hours. And if you don't finish your hours while you're in custody, those hours are then portable, because again, it's with the Department of Labor. It is not a bureau program, which is so, so important.
Yes.
So that's brand new. We haven't even heard what the pay scale is going to be, but a very good thing. Director Marshall just released, Deputy Director Smith just released another video talking about the strike teams that they're putting together for facility maintenance, which again, I think is kind of an awesome idea in terms of getting things done. They're deploying additional staff in this case to institutions for these projects so that they can be getting more done, because they'll have more facility staff on site for these projects to provide more supervision, to have more inmates working with them to get these projects done. And again, it's about taking the one-time money that was given to the Bureau and really capitalizing on it, whether it's going to Unicorp for fabrication of materials or working staff, working with inmates, and avoiding having to hire outside contractors.
Right. So I know some of y'all are tuning out like, well, what the hell does this have to do with my loved one? Well, I'll tell you what, it's the structure. If the structure's good and the institution's running.
I lost you, Bruce. Your mic cut out.
Okay. How about now?
You're good.
Okay. If the institution's running better, it's going to trickle its way to your loved one.
Okay? Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah. While we're talking about facility improvements and those things, that still relates to your loved one.
When you consider an institution, say that it's shut down a housing unit or two housing units because of significant repairs that are needed or because the roof is leaking, what happened to the inmates that were living in that housing unit? They have now been put over into other units. And so instead of having a 128 bed unit that has 90 to 100 inmates in it, right? So there's some folks that have some single cells. You don't have people on top of each other, you know, access to the showers and the microwaves and the phones and the computers. You have 128 bed units that have 128 people in them. And as I used to say, when I was involved in counting beds and cells and working on some projects when I was in central office, full prisons are not a good thing, right? Never are they a good thing. So when you can have a housing unit, when you have all of your housing units and all of your cells open and available, then you can run, you know, like I said, 90 to 100 guys in a pod rather than the full 128. And it just makes everyone's life better.
So this big, beautiful bill and other things, you know, they got money. You and I both activated FMC Carswell in 1994, and we had cost centers that were one time, right? It was an activation cost center.
Right.
Right. And so we made sure that we spent the money effectively. We were good stewards of the public trust, but knowing, hey, man, this is it. this is our chair, at least for a long ass time. But, you know, I don't think they've got that kind of money since, unless they added on, you know, a new.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't even think they did. When they did Unit 2 North, when they did the high rise, I think it was only a marginal. Anyway, same cost center.
I can't remember that, but that was a long time ago.
So anyway, yeah, I know. But I remember it like it's yesterday. There I was wearing my nickel grays compound officer. I was for a little bit. Yeah.
We had to do escort duty for the contractors, remember?
Yeah, that too. So anyhow, so this is relevant. This is germane, and we hope and pray that the BOP uses this money effectively, wisely. So far, so good. The strike teams, so good. The intentions.
And this new pay grade, this new pay scale will give an opportunity for individuals with some skill sets who are in prison, or maybe they're wanting to learn, right? Maybe they're wanting to learn those new skills for reentry purposes, or just to make their time go by better. They're going to have a different, better pay scale than someone who's an orderly or someone who's picking up, you know, mowing the grass on the yard or picking up trash on the yard. I almost said picking up cigarette butts, but they don't do that anymore.
That was back in the day. The CCS out, orderly, in the
that
detail
was back
pouch.
In the day.
That's right.
But anyway, yeah, but it's like I said, it's a new, it's brand new, and it's going to be good for the facility departments, for the to get things done, but also for the inmate population. They're going to be able to, you know, have a little bit more money in their commissary account, whether that's to send money home or to call more frequently or to email more frequently. They're going to have some additional funds, and that's a good thing.
That is a good thing. So we have about 3 minutes left. So another great discussion here today, you know, folks, and come to our Facebook group, right? Early Release from Federal Prison, First Step Act Facebook group. Very popular group on Facebook.
You're pushing like 17,000. You're getting close.
We're coming up to 17,000. And this group is based on attraction rather than promotion. I do nothing. She and I do nothing other than this podcast and answer posts
answer
on there.
We
are not hooping and hollering and using bots for FOTBAN. It's as organic as it gets, which I love about it, right? So feel free to join the group. Feel free to come to the First Step Act YouTube page. Of course, there's also a Around the Block podcast Facebook group that I load these podcasts that are also on LA Talk Radio onto that Facebook group. So there's multiple ways to connect to us. Podcasts are on LA Talk Radio, Apple Podcast, Amazon Audible, and several other podcast aggregators. Again, we're picked up on a lot of these aggregators, not because we pay people to do that, just because we've had some good fortune, I guess, and a steady and growing listener base and viewing base. So we appreciate that. We want to thank you for hanging in there. I know this stuff. And thank you, Sam, at LA Talk Radio. The owner, he's like, I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about, but I guess somebody knows. I don't know. What the hell? So it's kind of funny. So thank you, Sam, for allowing us to have the show, even though we're speaking all this BOP stuff, and it has a pretty narrow audience. But boy, howdy, guess what? Have we got so many calls? Thank you so much. Thank you for explaining that. Boy, the people that need this show, man, big time.
Absolutely.
So, and that is so nice. Susan and I get a lot of pleasure hearing about how folks really value the information, and they also value our accessibility. Anyway, closing comments.
Working on a new book for our people. It'll be on the Second Chance Act. It'll be, I haven't figured out what color it's going to be yet. We got to decide. We'll have the blue book, the green book, and something else. But, the three books together will be quite the resource for, families and inmates and attorneys and, looking at the spring for that, maybe a little sooner, but we're looking at springtime for that, and that's about it.
That's about it for now. Okay, everybody. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on Around the Block on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody. Be safe out there.
Bye-bye. Bye.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.